Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 30th, 2013. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Philip Lamb, our man in France, talks to Jean Van Roy, owner of Cantillon, arguably the world's premier lambic brewery. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus, too. You can find our little community on Google Plus by searching for Basic Brewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link at our basicbrewing.com site. You know how it works. Whenever you think of shopping on Amazon, don't go to Amazon first. Go to basicbrewing.com first. Click on our Amazon ad. That will take you to Amazon.com, and then you can shop as usual, and whatever you purchase, we'll be getting a little chunk of that. We greatly appreciate that. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app and our on iTunes and our Android app on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory. We're on the Stitcher app, and we're on the Windows Phone directory, too. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at BasicBrewingShop.com. In the front of the book is a calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. And the good thing about the calendar is that it is blank. So you have a full year of calendar pages no matter when you start your brewing year, and there is room in the back of the book to log the details of up to 50 batches of brew. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who has done so already. And one more thing, protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. The bag is essentially a cylindrical cooler that is just the right size to accommodate a 64-ounce growler or a couple of 22-ounce bombers or three 12-ounce bottles. And it has an adjustable strap so you can sling it over your shoulder. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com, and there is only a limited number of those available. I'm going to keep my comments relatively short this week. We've got a lot to cover. Philip did a great job of interviewing Jean Van Roy, and But before we get into that, I do want to remind you that each June, we take the whole month off from posting podcast episodes. That doesn't mean that we're being lazy. We're not sitting out on the porch drinking beer, not doing anything, although there will be some of that. We'll be covering the National Homebrewers Conference in Philadelphia, and we'll be brewing up some other things, too. It's also time for a family vacation and lots of other stuff going on in June. So rather than just wrestling with all that stuff, trying to do kind of a halfway job of posting the podcast, we just take the whole month off, and we'll be back in July with more good stuff. But right now, let's virtually cross the Atlantic to talk to our buddy Philip Lamb. Philip Lamb, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James. It's good to be back.
Last time you were on the show, we were sitting in Andy's happy place out on the deck enjoying some French beers that you brought over.
I remember it well.
And we don't have that luxury today, unfortunately.
But you don't have that luxury today. I'm actually having a nice Cantillon.
Well, rub it in. Rub it in.
Just anytime.
I have access to corn dogs anytime I want.
Well, then you win the day, sir.
That's the danger of referencing pre-recording conversations. He's over there, Philip's over there in France enjoying, the world's best lambic and home-cooked French meals and jealous that I went to Sonic for lunch. So there you go.
Sonic, the corn dogs.
So you had a little bit of a chat with somebody who's fairly important in the world of lambic brewing the other night. Who did you talk to?
Well, I had the privilege of meeting Jean Van Roy, who's the brewmaster at Cantillon, which is in Brussels. He was at an event sort of celebrating his beer at La Fine Mousse, which is the beer bar in Paris. It's in the 11th arrondissement. LaFineMousse.fr, if you're interested. And he was giving a tasting of three different beers, the Cantillon Gueuze Bio, and Bio in French is organic, so it's his organic goose. And he was also doing a tasting of the Saint Lambinus. And finally, it was the official unveiling in any sort of tasting scenario of the Cantillon 50 degrees north, 4 degrees east, which is the sought-after bottle of this year and from Cantillon. And he was doing just a little guided tasting. We tried three different beers, and he taught us a little bit about each one and about where they come from and that sort of thing. And I had some time before everything got started to ask him a little bit about what Cantillon does and how they do their magic. And he was kind enough to provide me with a few answers.
Now, for those who are not familiar with Cantillon's beers, how would you describe them overall?
Well, they're lambics, which means they're sour beers. They are, how would I say this? They're made in the traditional sense. So they're not like a lot of the other lambic breweries where there'll be a lot of added sugar. There'll be a lot of back sweetening just to make it more accessible to the market. They are absolutely making the same recipes that they were using 100 years ago when the brewery first started. And he's very proud of that fact. And it's actually funny. There's a group called the Oral Group, H-O-R-A-L, which is a sort of syndicate of goods, lambic producers in Belgium. They're basically the camera of goods producers, of lambic producers. And he actually refuses to take part because, as he says, they are promoting a relabeling of a product, because goods, when you see it nowadays, is associated with something that is not as traditional, is not as good, frankly, is what had been on the market 100 years ago. Oral wants all corresponding beers to be labeled as Oud Goose, which is basically a way of saying goose, but the good kind. Oud Goose means old goose. And he does not want to have to change the labeling on his beer because, as far as he's concerned, they've been brewing goose for 100 years and nothing's changed. It's the industry that's changed. Mm-hmm. So he's known as somewhat of a radical. But at the same time, very traditional. So he's a traditional radical, shall we say. And he has great respect for the magic that goes on inside the cool ships and later inside the barrels. And it's just a really fascinating guy to talk to.
Well, you asked him some good questions. You did a good job. And he not only talked about a bit of background about the brewery and about his industry, but he got into the nitty-gritty. He got into the nuts and bolts. So let's have a listen. And for experienced brewers, there may be some nuggets of wisdom in there that you may be able to use to make your own lambics at home.
Jean Van Roy, so I am the brewer at the Cantillon Brewery in Brussels. We are producing lambic, last beer in the world from spontaneous fermentation. And the brewery is running since 1900. I'm the fourth generation right now in activity at the brewery.
Okay. And when did you start? Was it passed from father to son, or?
Yes, father or mother, because my mother is the last Cantillon. So married with Jean-Pierre Van Roy, and my father took the brewery over in 68. I'm working there since I was born. But officially, I'm working at brewery since 1990. I am brewing alone. We finished it, the season 1 month ago, and it was my 11th season.
How have you seen things change from when you started to now? Is there, or even before that, is there more production, less production, different varieties?
More production for sure, because the demand is growing a lot since end of the 90s, begin 2000. First of all, mentalities changed. In the 70s and the 80s, those times were very, very difficult for beers like Lambic, for beers with character in general. This time were decades for the sweet beers, for the easy products.
Yeah.
And things changed 10, 15 years ago. Yeah. And in the right way for us, because more and more people have interest for beers with character and for sour beers. Yeah. And Lambic is a sour beer.
Do you see... I'm curious as to how much you would say your audience is Europe, well, Belgium, Europe versus the U.S. and Canada and other places like that.
I think that the changement began with Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson made a lot of good things for craft breweries, so we. We began to feel the changement, as I said, begin 90s, so 20 years ago. But naturally, the big changement came from North America, US and Canada. And it's because of the interest for beer coming from US that Lambic is probably still alive today.
Yeah.
US. And in Europe, a bit Italy and Scandinavia, those two countries or area play a very important role for Lambic as well. But you know, in the 70s and 80s, nobody wanted a beer like Lambic. No one. It was too sour, and Lambic was considered like an archaic product. And it's because of the renewal coming from US that we have know this success, I think. Because even today in Belgium, for a Belgian, a beer like Lambic or a beer made with Lambic, like a goose of a fruit beer, is a sweet beer.
Yeah.
Because the big majority of those beers in Belgium are produced by industrial manure and are sweet. The fruit beers are making with syrup, with essence.
Yeah, when I think of Creek, it's something that's really syrupy.
That's still the big problem, naturally. We are producing at the Cantillon Brewery a beer called Creek Lambic. When you taste the Cantillon, it's fruity but sour, because we are working with fresh fruits, and Lambic is a sour beer, and the fruits we use, Creek is the Flemish name to describe small black and sour cherries. So at the Cantillon Brewery, when we mix sour fruit with sour beer, I'm not a magician, I produce a sour beer. But today 98-99% of the beer called Creek Lambic in Belgium are made without any drop Lambic and with syrup and essence, and those two beers have exactly the same name. And it's
surprising there's not an AOC or something to protect
it was
that.
Sorry,
it's not an protection AOC.
No it's yes and no. You have a protection existed if you want. It's a group called Oral, so in Flemish Oraad voor Ambachtelijke Lambic, so the big council for Lambic, for traditional Lambic, and we don't take part of this group, because this group includes industrial breweries, so we don't want to sit at the same table than those people, because if tomorrow they have to fight to defend a type of Lambic goes of fruit beers, they will defend the one with they live,
yeah.
And naturally they will defend the industrial one. But this group decided to build a protection and a AOC for goes and for Creek. So theoretically, the craft goes and Creek have to be called Old Goose or Old Creek. So old one, Old Goose or Old Creek. But we don't use it. It's we don't want to change our own name. It's a question of
Of
morality, if you want. You know, at the Cantillon Brewery, the we are working with material from the 19th century.
Yeah.
This material, it's still running right now. And my great-grandfather, the founder of the Cantillon Brewery, used exactly the same material. He used the same recipe, the same type of cereals. All our production is organic, so 100 years ago, cereals were probably also organic, even if the name, the certificate organic didn't exist in those times. But so we are working today exactly in the same way, with the same material, with the same type of cereals, with the same recipe. We take the same time to produce a beer because Alembic needs a lot of time, between 2 and 3 years. We take actually 2 or 3 years to produce a beer, and we have to change the name of our beer.
Yeah.
My great grandfather produced a beer called Goose or Creek. I don't understand why we have to change the name of our product to please to the industrial lambic producers.
A little bit like the real ale thing in Britain, where
yeah.
it has to be this and this
yeah.
and this.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then you
it's
can't
the same. The idea is going in the same way.
Yeah. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that you're not a magician, but in America, there's a big, as we were talking about earlier, there's a big push towards trying sour beers and Goose and lambic. And usually, when there's something new that comes around, homebrewers take it and just develop the hell out of it. Or you get styles commercially that arrive because of homebrewing, but I'm not so sure that there's the same level of attack, as it were, on sour beers. Because personally speaking, for me, and I'm sure for a lot of other people, it does seem a little magical. And there's also this fear of, I'm going to make this beer, but it's going to get completely infected and it'd be impossible to drink, and that sort of thing. So I mean, what would you say, is it possible to brew sour beers at home?
Yes, sure. I think so. It's the difficulties will probably come of the volume. So your wort have to cool down during the night. When we brew at the Cantillon Brewery, a brew give at the end of the day, so when we pump up the wort on the cool ship, turn around 7,500 liters. It's a lot.
Yeah.
That's why the wort will stay in contact with the air for the natural inoculation with the airborne yeast during one night. To produce a spontaneous fermentation beer at home, it's possible for sure. A natural inoculation will be possible for sure, but the problem could be probably the time. How many times the beer will stay in contact with the air? Because when we pump up our wort, the temperature is turning around. I don't know exactly in Fahrenheit. I will speak in Celsius. 85, 90 degrees. The day after, in the morning, before to fill up the barrels, the wooden barrels, the ideal temperature turn around between 18 and 20 degrees.
Yep. Okay. Room temperature.
So, and to reach such a temperature a night is enough. If people are producing at home 10, 20, 50 liters, the problem can come of the cooling down can come too fast.
Okay.
See you? So to reach those 18, 20 degrees, the wort could stay in contact with the air only, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 hours, and it could be not enough to have the right inoculation.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
I helped a friend for more than 10 years ago. He made some spontaneous fermentation beer in Brussels. in the commune of Forêt, Vaux. So located, that's 3-4 kilometers far from the far from the brewery, and so he had no problem with the cooling. He had no problem with the inoculation, I think, but in the wooden barrel, if I remember, he produced 50 liters. The fermentation goes too fast, and the beer was ready too fast and without balance. So, but it's possible to produce spontaneous fermentation beer everywhere. And when I say I'm not a magician, I am not a magician, but the beer is magic, yeah, for sure.
Do you think that it would be perhaps useful to somehow artificially heat the wort during the night with sort of a curve that reduces to
yeah,
artificially
yeah,
replicate that sort of thing?
It could be. We never did it naturally because we...
There's no need.
It's no need. But yeah, I think that the time to stay in contact with the air play an important role. Yeah.
So obviously many homebrewers are not going to want to wait 3 years or 1, 2, and then 3 years and then blend their own lambic to get a nice goods.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say that people could go about getting the oak character into their beer in a sufficient way to really...
We don't have a lot of oak character. Huh? We don't use wood for the tannin. We don't need tannin. That's the reason why in a lambic brewery or at the Cantillon brewery, we never work with new barrels, only second hand barrels, and we don't research tannin. We are working for wood because of the contact, indirect contact between beer and the air. So lambic is an oxidative beer, and because we have some contact with the air, with the exterior, to develop those specificity and those oxidative flavors.
But what about like the Vigneron or the Saint Lambinus or things like that? Specific regions, would that be? Could we take an oak stave or an oak spiral and soak it in a bottle of Latour for a day or a week, and then add that?
It's we research first for the fruit beers, even for the Saint Lambinus and the Vigneron. Research first what the fruits can bring to the beer, and not especially the tannin. Naturally, in the Saint Lambinus, you will find back some tannin, but some tannin coming from the grape,
yeah, okay,
not from the wood.
Interesting. That's just what's left over. Is it? Could you explain a little bit about the process for making that beer? You use barrels that are from
from the beginning, from Alembic.
When we
fill up our wooden barrels, so the day after the brew, the Alembic stay in the brewery at least one summer. So we never use Alembic before the first summer. So all the beer produced during this winter, for example, so winter 2012-2013, we don't use actually any drop lambic. So we will wait till September, and in September we will begin to use this beer. And this beer will be considered as a young beer, a young lambic, 1 year. And we conserve lambic at least 1 year, maximum 3 years, so 3 summers. The result is that we have at our disposal different types of beers to make our final product, if you want. It's not the right word, final product, because we can drink lambic as well, naturally. It's a wonderful beer, totally flat. But with lambic, we will produce later other types of beers like Geuze. A Geuze is a blend of different lambic from different ages, different flavors, different aromas. So that's my work. I'm a brewer naturally, but I'm first a blender. So my work is to choose all those different lambics to try to reproduce a beer with the same touch, the same base. It's impossible to reproduce exactly the same beer. Each goose will be different, but the Cantillon touch, the Cantillon base, have to come back each time. So. okay? And so we bottle the blend. If we use the young lambic, it's because young lambic contains some sugar left for the natural second fermentation in the bottle. If we use 3 years old lambic, it's because of the character of the balance those beers will bring in the blend. And thanks to the sugar coming from the young beers, start a natural second fermentation in the bottle.
I think this is very important because this may be something that not a lot of people know. You know, why we blend beer because it gives us different properties, but it's also important to include that that young beer for the residual sugars in order to have a secondary fermentation in the bottle.
Sure, and time to time. Not time to time, at the end of the season, for example, so I left the brewery this morning, the crew prepared a blend, a lambic blend, but with beer from 1, 2, and 3 years, but old 1, 2, and 3 years old beer, because in September, those beers will have 2, 3, and 4 years.
Yeah.
So, for the blend we made this morning, we added a bit sugar because the young beer were too old and didn't contain sugar enough for the natural second fermentation.
And
so even for the goose, time to time, we have to add 2-3 grams sugar per liter.
What kind of sugar do you use?
Liquid sugar.
Okay.
Saccharose.
No,
yeah.
Okay.
No,
like Belgian candy sugar.
No. And so, but we need naturally those sugar to start the natural second fermentation. So when we bottle the beer is totally flat, and for the goose we have to wait months, time to time, 1 year, 1 year and a half, before to have the right carbonation and to have the possibility to sell the beers. And for the fruit beer, because with lambic we produce fruit beers as well, so we mix fresh fruits during the summer. So the most important fruits and the most traditional are naturally the cherry or the creek and the framboise.
And you don't
the raspberry.
You don't clean them or anything. They just go. They go straight
and
in.
We don't clean them, but we are working for most of them with organic fruits as well. So theoretically, it's not necessary to clean it. So our Schaerbeek cherries for the Loupépé are organic. The classic creek is organic. The apricot is organic for the Fufun. Normally, next season the muscat for the vigneron will be organic. And the Merlot grapes we use for the Saint Lambinus is not organic, but we are working with a winemaker which is working in the right way. We know that he's not he don't
because
have the organic certificate, but
in many cases the certification is actually really hard to get because there are very specific things that may not apply to some people. So for example, the Saint Lambinus, you don't actually with when you use your barrels, are they barrels from specific regions?
No, we don't. I don't. For the Saint Lambinus, we are working with barrels and inox tank.
Yeah.
So for the fruit maceration, we use inox tanks as well. Stainless steel. Yes, sorry, stainless steel. When we are working with barrels, we don't work only with barrels we use for the first time, because naturally when we are working with what we call new barrels, but those barrels are second-hand ones, but use it for the first time, lambic will extract what the wood contains previously.
Okay.
And naturally, if it's wine barrels and big majority of those barrels are coming from wine country. It's interesting to work with those barrels for fruit beers like Vigneron and Saint Lambinus, because to accentuate the wine flavors, the wine aromas. But it's not the goal we research first. But if I have the possibility to do it, I will do it without exaggeration.
Yeah.
So the goal is first to find the right blend between the fruit and the beer.
Do you have a certain, you know, pounds per liter or kilograms per liter that you try for fruit?
Yeah, we are working for the special cuvée like Fufun, Lupepe, Vigneron, Saint-Lambinus with 300 grams fruits per liter.
Okay.
And for the classic, so the classic Creek and Rosé de Gambrinus, the raspberry one, with 180, 200 grams per liter.
And do you crush them? Do you slice them? Do you anything? Or
no,
throw them in there?
Only on, in fact, for the grapes, we don't use the wood.
Yeah.
Naturally, so only the fruit. I don't know the name in English. Égrappé. So we
grapes. I think it's the same word. You I don't know what it is. That's weird.
We take the grapes off from the piece of wood.
Yeah.
And for the apricot, we open, so we broke the fruits in two to extract a part of the stone.
Okay.
We use only 50% of the stone because we need a bit this woody flavors coming from the stone and from the almond.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do you for any of yours? I tried. Garrett Oliver was in town a few months ago, and he had us try a beer that. It's one of his Ghost Bottle series, so it doesn't get circulated around. It's for special events, basically. But it was very interesting. What he had done was to take a barrel of, I think it was Riesling, or maybe it was Gewürztraminer or something like that, and he aged, I believe it was Brooklyn Monster, which is a barley wine, if I'm not mistaken, on the lees of the wine, so that's the kind of the yeast and various things left over. Do you do any of that, or do you completely clean the barrels before you put them through, or what?
Normally we clean completely the barrels, but for some special experiment we use the barrels uncleaned, and we did it last year, an old dream I had was to found a good barrels from Vin Jaune.
Okay.
So Vin Jaune is this wonderful oxidative wine coming from the French area Jura, so near the Switzerland border. And like lambic, those wine produce a pellicle to protect the wine from the air present in the barrel. But if I keep my beer during 3 times to 4 years to receive the name vin jaune, so yellow wine, they have to keep their wine during at least 6 years and 6 months. I remember, or 8 months. And so my friend Stéphane Tissot, a great vin jaune producer, bring last year in February a barrel, fresh, emptied, and uncleaned with some lye, some sediment in the barrel, and we filled the barrel so, without cleaning. And the beer is
so
wonderful.
When is that bottle coming out?
But the beer is still in the barrel, and my goal is not to commercialize it because I will extract probably less than 200 liters from the barrel. But the beer is really amazing. It's we found back the specificity of lambic and vin jaune as well. It's It's really surprising,
yeah,
and very, very good.
Would it be worthwhile maybe for some homebrewers to try to get barrels, for example, of local wineries to try to put things
in there and
the same thing?
We can. You have a very good brewery in Italy, Loverbier. He's working on a base from beer world and wine world.
Yeah.
It's must you say? Yeah. So it's it's very original, and the results are very good.
I think Sam Calderon did that with what is it called?
Del Borgo?
Midas Touch.
Oh.
Which is a beer that he did with, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it had grape, it had like some kind of ancient grape must or something in it. So, and it was, you really get kind of it's a wine instrument.
Not only the interesting thing for me is that we are working with wine sediment, wine lies contained a lot of different types of yeast.
Yeah.
And we had a word also with a lot of different types of yeast.
So they're competing.
So I suppose that the complexity in such a blend will be huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
It'll be fun.
And fun. Anyway. And sure.
Can we
and you spoke about Gewürztraminer. We did also just 2 years ago or last year. A small experiment, also one a small barrel, but you know, no one knows that those beers exist. We made also an experiment with Lambic and Gewürztraminer.
Okay, so
and the result was good, but we expected more because Gewürzt is a very aromatic grape, and we expected to find more aromatic flavor in the beer, and Lambic was probably a bit too strong for the grape.
Be interested to see what could happen with Sauternes or something like that. I like Sauternes as a white, and so I feel like
we made such an experiment not with Botrytis grapes but with sweet grapes years ago, and the result was not. In fact, Lambic converted all the sugar coming from the grapes. And finally, without sugar, those grapes have no more character. But we made such an experiment with Botrytis grapes coming from Austria. So this beer exists officially. This beer was made for Akurat in Sweden, and on the name of Goldäckel. And it was a blend of Lambic with two types of grapes. If I remember, it was a Welsh Riesling and I don't remember the name of the other variety. Welsh Riesling and Semling. And the result was very special,
yeah.
Very good, very special. And the second originality for this beer was the blend. So to start the fermentation in the bottle, Stene, the owner of Akurat, had the idea to mix a part of sweet wine made with the same type of grapes and Lambic. So, and the beer matured with. So 70... For one bottle, 70 centiliters Lambic and 5 centiliters wine.
As like a back sweetening sort
of
thing?
Yeah. And so Lambic used the sugar, converted the sugar coming from the wine to produce Guess.
Yeah.
So
it was
very, very special, very good. So if I remember, the beer had more than 10% ABV.
Yeah.
But probably one of the most Cantillon, the most special Cantillon.
It'd be very interesting to see what would happen if you were to do the same thing, except you riddle the Cantillon first, and so it's bottle fermented and it's ready to go, and then you riddle it, and then you back sweeten it like a méthode champenoise,
yeah.
But with wine.
If you want, it was a bit like a méthode champenoise.
Be very interesting. Hmm? So what is your mash temperature? How much malt for
mash temperature? It's a bit technical because we use a special technique called moutrouble, so turbid mash.
Okay.
So we begin our mash at 48 Celsius. So during 10 minutes We don't add water. We continue, we continue the mixing. After 10 minutes, we had hot water to reach 56, and then we begin to pump a part of the wort. So without stop the blend, the propellers, the mixers, we begin to pump a part of the liquid in one of the two boilings.
It's like a decoction.
If you want, yeah. Okay. Decoction, it's a mix of decoction and infusion. From 56, we grew up to 66. Same thing. We extract the liquid to pump up the liquid on the so it's not a real word because we didn't reach 72, but we pump up the liquid on the same time. We pump around 2,000 liters turbid mash from the mash tun. Then 72, so we obtain the first saccharification. We empty it the tun, but we pump the wort in the other boiling tun, because we are working with two boiling tun at the Cancillon Brewery. Then the turbid mash is coming back in the mash tun. We reach 76-77 degrees, and we continue to fill up the other tun.
Okay, until you're ready to
until but we extract a lot of sugar. We begin with a wort at 14 Plato.
Okay.
And we end the extraction with a wort around 3.5-4 Plato.
So it's pretty dry,
yeah,
when it comes out.
Yeah. So we extract a lot of sugar.
Okay, cool. And then for the hops, it's minimum 3 years for aged,
hop,
yeah?
Between 2 and 3, yeah. So I used during this season hop from the harvest 2009 and 2010. So we are working with wort, with hop, sorry, coming from European countries, Germany, Czechia, or England. For the last season, I used Allertau, Tettnang, so from Bavaria, Germany, and Saaz from Czechia.
These are basically there's no more alpha acid or anything.
Not a lot, and yeah. they are hop with low alpha. So it's normally you have still some bitterness because we are working with a lot of hop. If you take at the end of the production, when we commercialize Lambic, we extract from the barrels 5,500 liters for a brew.
Okay.
And we are working with 25 kilo hops. So it's not so far from 500 grams for 100 liters for an hectoliter.
That's it's not a whole lot, it seems.
It's normally, with such a volume,
yeah,
the beer would be bitter.
Yeah.
But you found back some bitterness in a young lambic, mm-hmm, 1 year, but the more you keep lambic, the less bitterness in the beer. And finally, you found a bit bitterness in a young lambic, 1 year old, but in a blend, like a goose, blend of 1, 2, and 3 years old, you don't find bitterness no more. Yes, maybe a bit, but it's mostly sour.
Right. What about the grain? Is it just Belgian Pilsner?
We are working with Pilsner, yeah, classic Pilsner. We are working with two malt company, Dingemans in Belgium, and Schilz in Germany at the Belgian border, Cologne, Köln. And we are working with two suppliers for the wheat, two Belgian one, one in Flanders, one in Wallonia.
Do you ever use any specialty malts or anything like that?
Time to time, for the special or for the Iris. For Iris, we are working with pale ale.
Okay.
and time to time. For I made this season for the Zwans 2014 or 2015. I don't know. It will depend of the fermentation. If the fermentation is going well, it will be for 2014. If not 2015 or later, I made an experiment. A bit special. The goal was to produce spontaneous fermentation stout, and for this one I use a specific mold. Yeah.
Okay.
But normally for the classic lambic, it's just pilsner. Yeah. Only pilsner. Okay.
So then I said two questions earlier. So really two questions now. It's really simple. The first one: do you have any advice that you could give to homebrewers that are looking to try their own lambic to make their own goods? Or?
Cold temperature. Yeah. Even if the temperature are cold, take care.
For the fermentation, you mean?
Temperature. So temperature for the natural cooling for the inoculation.
Right. Okay.
You know why we are working during the winter? First of all, because of the temperature, we need cold night for the natural cooling, and because we need a yeast inoculation. If we are working during a warm period, even if the night are cold, warm period means development of bacteria.
Okay.
So, and bacteria,
that's very important.
So a simple example. At the Cantillon Brewery, we begin to work always when we had a first frozen night. Without frozen night, no brew. So theoretically, a frozen night kill not all the bacteria, but a lot.
Okay.
And normally, it's not a problem for yeast. So research really a yeast activity and not a bacterial activity. So first of all, they have to work during cold night and cold period. The best temperature for us, but like I told you, we are working with a big volume, 7,500 liters. The best temperature for us are located around 0 degrees.
Okay.
Celsius. Yeah.
Okay.
And another advice. If you want to work with the nature, try to work with natural products. I think that nature needs natural things.
So last question is, so James and Steve are two guys who kind of do this video podcast that's related with the audio podcast, and they're big into making food and things with beer, and I don't think I've ever seen them do anything with lambics or goods. So is there anything you could give us some recipe ideas?
For me the most simple and the best one is a very old Brussels recipe called in Flemish, in Brussels dialect, Bollekes Megeuze. So it's
excuse me.
meatballs,
yeah,
with goose and with wheat loaf, chicon. But I don't know the name in English. So you know, in France they call it endive belge. Belgian endive. Belgian endive.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. For the recipe, it's very simple. Some onions and Belgian endives in a casserole.
A pot.
A pot. Yeah. In a pot, you know, with some olive oil or butter. In a pan, you prepare your meatballs. Okay. When the meatballs are ready, and when the onions and the Belgian endives are ready as well, you mix Belgian endives the meatballs in the same pot than the Belgian endives, and you had one bottle of goose on
okay.
it. And
750 or
yeah, 750.
Yeah.
If you want a lot of taste, a lot of flavors, 750. Don't hesitate. And you have to wait
to cook at feu doux. So
it's a slow flame or a low flame.
Low flame. Thank you. So low flame during at least 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
that's.
That sounds like what I'm going to make tomorrow night. Then,
yeah.
What kind of beer? Which one of the Cantillon beers would you use for that?
The good.
Yeah, just the
good. Good. But you have a lot of recipe made with good. You know, in fact, all the recipe where you found white wine, don't hesitate to use Gueuze or Lambic.
That'd be interesting.
Without problem, because Gueuze and Lambic are beers are not bitter, so that's it's a bit a problem when you want to cook with beer in place of wine. You will find back bitterness.
Yeah.
You don't have bitterness in the Gueuze or in the Lambic. So all the recipe made with white wine, try with Lambic, and you will see the result is perfect.
My wife is not going to be very happy because I'm going to be cooking all the time now. So anyway, thanks very much. I really appreciate it. That's been great.
My pleasure.
Yeah, cheers.
So good job, Philip. I think you asked some good questions that, I'm going to have to listen to it again to kind of take some notes, especially on the mashing process and kind of see how I could translate some of that into a homebrew setup. And also, come in the wintertime when it starts to get cold, I think I'm going to be setting out some wort.
Yeah. I actually, one of the most interesting things that he mentioned during that interview was when he talked about the importance of a gradual reduction in temperature during the inoculation. So during that first initial process when you've run all the wort into the cool ship. I have some friends at the Pasteur Institute here in Paris, and we were talking about yeasts and microbes and things, like sometimes we do over a few beers. And I mentioned this, and I put forth the idea that perhaps the reason that large-scale lambic brewing works well is because of this massive volume, this huge thermal mass that has to be cooled down gradually just because it's so hot, it's so big, it takes a long time. And if there's maybe something in that process that allows the more heat-tolerant yeasts to set up and give them a foothold as the temperature gradually goes down, and then as that temperature is going down, different yeasts and maybe even a little bit of bacteria start to get their footholds as well. But it's more preferential because of this heat slope, as you might call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's preferential towards the yeast that are producing the kind of beers that we want. So when he said it's difficult for homebrewers to reproduce what we do, I believe what he was talking about was the fact that a 20-liter cool ship is going to cool down from boiling to room temperature or evening air temperature over the course of maybe 2 hours, 3 hours. And that's not enough of a time for the beneficial yeast to get a foothold. That's just conjecture, but it's conjecture that's theoretically backed up by microbiologists from the Pasteur Institute. So I'm going to take that as absolute proof that what I say is correct. Very interesting to do maybe a little project where you set up a heat pad on your little cool ship, on your fermenter, or on your cool ship that keeps the heat that keeps the temperature up overnight, so that you artificially stimulate this sort of massive thermal mass.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation where, they've been doing this for generations, this process, and they do it this way because it works, not because it's been scientifically tested. It's just that's the way they've done it over the years, and that's the way it works. And it's up to science to kind of back engineer the process and kind of figure out why it works.
Yeah, I mean, you should see their brewery. It's it is not up to OSHA standards, shall we say. I mean, there are leather belts flying all over the place and dust everywhere, and not a stainless steel vessel in sight, which is actually a big contrast to what I saw at Boone Brauerei, where they just replaced all of their old school goods producing stuff with 100% stainless. It's really impressive. I tweeted a photo about that not too long ago, but
And that's kind of a tease to where we will hear you next on this program, because you took a tour of Goose producing breweries and recorded some sound for us. And here in probably late July or so, we'll be coming back and talking about that.
Yep, I'm looking forward to it.
Now, for those who want to see you in action, there's a place that people can do that?
There is. There's a new in the U.S., old, at least been around for a while in France, site called cook.com. It's not spelled the way you think. It's Q-O-O-Q. Quebec, Oscar, Quebec, which is basically a Food Network Lite, if you will. They have a lot of different French chefs, some famous names, some not so famous names, that present recipes from start to finish. And it's kind of a neat subscription service. First 15 days are free. Anyway, they had me in to do a couple of taping sessions for, is that what you say? They had me to do a taping. I don't know. What would they call it in Hollywood? Anyway.
Well, there's no tape anymore, so. People used to call it filming and then taping, and now it's, I don't know, disking. I don't know. They recorded some stuff with you.
Well, there was no disking going on, I'll tell you that. And Congressman, I deny any disking charges. But they had me come in and show how to make a couple of all-grain beers. So I did your brew-in-a-bag small batch process, where we had a one-gallon fermenter and made a rye IPA. It's actually Denny Kahn's rye IPA that we made. And his name is up there on the chalkboard. And a American barley wine. And you get to see me cranking through about 5 kilos of malt.
Wow.
Which is fine and makes for sore arms. But that should be coming out sometime towards the end of June on the website.
Well, great. We'll look for that. And we look forward to getting together again on the Tour de Goose. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time to get this week's interview. It's very fascinating stuff. And I'm sure that people will be enjoying it in the archives for many years to come.
I hope it'll be useful.
Thanks, Philip.
Thanks. Cheers.
Well, thanks again to Philip for getting beer info and a recipe to boot. And we greatly appreciate the time and knowledge of Jean Van Rooy. Remember, we are taking June off from posting episodes, so we will see you in July. Until then, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Our new Basic Brewing growler bags are now available in our shop. Protect your precious homebrew and craft beer as you take it from place to place. As the weather warms up this season north of the equator, check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All-Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. And we've got some combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. Our Brewer's Logbooks are on the store as well. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. And you can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Nature's Answer White Willow Bark, 1 ounce, and Stone Cask Ice Rounds. Silicon ice mold makes 2 large 2.5-inch ice balls. Slow melting ice balls look great while chilling your drink without water. Thanks again, and remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. And that link will also work all the way through June, even though we are not going to be podcasting. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through our associate link on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dutz, our man in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll see you in July, everybody. So long.